All right, thank you, Andrew. Can you hear me? All
Yes.
right, great. I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen. Okay, that should be it.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation to present today. I appreciate it. And thank you, Andrew, for the introduction. And I want to say congratulations on your recognition. And I want to say that there's just no way we could have pulled this off without your help and your active involvement. You've always been super actively engaged with the whole project from day one. And I really appreciate that. I mean, especially helping kind of push us through some of the stuff towards the end to make sure we get this thing delivered. It's always really great to have a partner like yourself that really that's really engaged and really interested in seeing the outcome of what we're working on. So thanks again for that. Really appreciate it. So with that, I am going to be presenting today on these results, as Andrew mentioned. And this report was put together with Andrew's help, but also myself as a forester and an analyst at the FAA program at the PNW Research Station in Portland, along with Andrew Gray and Olaf Kugler, who also work with the FAA program in Portland. So for the overview, real quick, of what I'm talking about today, I'm gonna give an overview of the program, just to make sure everyone's familiar with FIA and what we do. Presenting the final results from the carbon inventory reports. I'll be touching on our next effort, which is gonna be a regional carbon reporting effort. I'm gonna talk about the PNW Station Carbon Initiative, which is another thing that's kind of our next thing we're working on related to carbon. And then also talking about this, Andrew had mentioned it briefly, and this is with Dr. Jeremy Fried out of PNW Station, who's proposing a West Side Fire Effects and Recovery Study. I want to present a few slides on that. So with that, so briefly talking a little bit about the FIA program. So the FIA program, if you're not familiar, is a national program. And one of the things that's really cool about a national program is that we're able to use a nationally consistent field protocol, database, and compilation system. So that way we're able to combine similar and comparable estimates from our forest inventory plots across the country, which is really, really cool to be able to do that. And we have plots on all forested lands, on all states and territories, and U.S. affiliated islands. We're on all ownerships, public and private ownerships. Sampling intensity. So basically, since 2001, we've been on what we call an annualized design, where we'll go in and measure, on the West Coast anyway, 10% of all the plots each year. And the field plots are primarily located on a base grid of about one plot per 6,000 acres. And then the other thing that we recently got started with, thanks to help with ODF, is we've now intensified. So within Oregon, we have several different ownerships that are now on using a intensified sampling grid. So now we have intensified sampling grids for National Forest, BLM, and now with ODF forest lands. So basically on ODF forest lands, including those other public ownerships, we're on about one plot for about 1,850 acres, I think is the new intensified grid. So the ODF plots, we installed it this year. All the plots were measured, is like just over 300 plots. And we're still on track to get that initial measurement completed. So with that, we'll have really great information on ODF lands as well as the other public lands within Oregon. So nationally, the program is broken up into four different regions. The PNW region includes all the Western West Coast states, but also Hawaii and Alaska. We also include some of the Pacific Islands like Guam, American Samoa, Palau, Marshall Islands, and then some of the other Pacific Islands. Yes, it's a mass geographic area. The cost is huge to go out and measure some of those islands, but we do it. So yeah, it's really great data. So if you're not familiar with the program, we have basically a national website where you can go on and you can get state summary reports. You can download data from what we call the Data Mart, You can download inventory databases. It's all publicly available information. You can get the documentation and watch some training materials about the program. And you can also find out some status on the inventory. We have a cool map that we put up showing the status of each state, and it's kind of basically its current inventory and basically what year they're reporting on for the what's in the database. We've also developed some really cool tools like Evalidator and Datum, which allow any user to go in and produce, basically do a custom retrieval. So if you're interested in some kind of particular volume estimate or biomass estimate or carbon, you can go into some of these tools and do your own, produce your own summary tables of these things. And that's, I mean, this is all publicly available, but we also make ourselves available. So if anyone, I'm the outreach contact for PNW FIA. So if anyone's looking at these tools and they get stuck and they don't know what to do, please reach out to me and we can help you walk through that analysis or the data retrieval that you're working on. So what do we do with all this carbon data? So one of the things that FIA does is we participate in these different carbon assessments. And so nationally, FIA data feeds directly into the US EPA greenhouse gas inventory each year. This gets updated. And that's with Dr. Grant Domke out of the Northern Research Station. He's the one that compiles those estimates that goes into this report. They also go into the National Climate Assessment, and then also we produce estimates to go into the National Forest carbon assessments. Globally, this information gets put into the FIA Global Resource Assessments, and then also some UN land use and forestry assessments. So a lot of this information gets scaled up to a lot of different uses. So going back to PNW FIA, so looking specifically at carbon reporting at PNW, we initially got started back in 2008. We were contacted, Olaf Kugler and I were contacted by California Air Resources Board. And this was shortly after AB 32 was passed in California. And they're looking at installing a cap and trade program. And they were developing the forest protocol for that program. And they turned to FIA because they knew that it was a national program, that data they could get from that would be consistent across the country. So we put together basically the initial baseline estimates that went into the California cap and trade program. And we're continuing to update those estimates through time. But that's really where we got our feet wet, working with specific carbon projects on the different states. And since that time, CAL FIRE has funded different carbon reporting efforts. Basically, we produced a state carbon report for California from 2014 up through, last one we did is 2018, we're working on 2019 now, and they've already funded this for 2020. So we're continuing to produce these reports for the state of California. And then in 2018, we added the HWP, or the Harvest of Wood Products reporting. The ability to integrate estimates of carbon and harvest wood products has been added to these reports. As they've developed over time. And then in 2018, about the same time for Oregon, Washington Department of Natural Resources approached us about doing a similar carbon report. And a lot of, you know, similar to Oregon, it's like, well, we'll see what California is doing. This is really cool information. We'd like to have this kind of stuff in our state. So now we have California, Oregon, and Washington carbon reports. We just completed this report for Washington last month. It should be made available any day. And they also just completed their draft harvested wood products report. And that's one that's being done by Pam Domke's shop out of the Northern Research Station. And as far as I know, they have that draft completed, but it should be made available soon. But the cool thing is I feel like we've done a really good job of producing these kind of reports for the different states, providing real detailed information on carbon within each state. So looking specifically at Oregon, so the Oregon carbon report is based on the FIA plots. And this is a very poor resolution map of the plot distribution within Oregon. And you can see how the plots are scattered on forest land across the state. The denser areas are where the intensified grid is. And those are, right now, those are just show the national forest areas. So for the Oregon report, we have a total of what? Just over, what's that, a total of 9,465 field plots. And that includes 4,350 of these intensified plots on Region 6 intensified forested areas, which is a pretty incredible sample of field measured plots. Then I just wanted to include a couple cool little statistics here. So the latest estimate for Oregon shows 29.7 million acres of forest land within the state. And if anyone asks you about how many trees are in Oregon, FIA estimated that there were 10.3 billion live trees that are 1 inch or larger in the state of Oregon. So roughly 10 billion live trees in the state of Oregon. That doesn't take into account recent fires, but as of the 2016 report, when we put this together, just over 10 billion trees in the state of Oregon. How many of those are dug fir? Yeah, there's a lot of them as dug fir, yes. The other image on this slide is just a little graphic of what the plot footprint looks like. So if you're not familiar with FIA, the plot is broken into up into four different subplots. Each subplot represents about a quarter of an acre. The subplots are then broken into basically a nested plot. So we have a micro plot, which measures really small trees, seedlings and saplings. The regular subplot, which measures the larger trees. And then in Oregon, well, basically the West Coast states, because we have so many larger trees, we installed what we call a macro plot, which goes in and captures some of the larger trees. And that isn't something that's done on every, on the inventories across all the different states. That's really just for the West Coast, where we have a lot more large trees that we put in the macro plot. What we call the core design includes the micro plot and the subplot, the 24 foot radius subplot. Well, that's just kind of, oh, the other thing is on there is the downwood transects. So that's those orange bars that you see going through the plot. So that's where we take the downwood measurements. So as we get into the results for the Oregon Carbon Report, so I want to just kind of go through real quick on how we're reporting this. So what we did is we went in and we calculated estimates for each of these different carbon pools. So for this report, we have what we call live tree pool, which includes foliage and roots, standing dead trees, which just also includes roots, downwood debris, which is based on our measurements in roots, or no, not roots, sorry, undestroyed vegetation and roots. And then we have forest floor that includes carbon and duff and litter. We also include estimates of carbon in forest soils. And then as far as carbon stored as harvested wood products, as Andrew mentioned before I started this presentation, that's going to be presented by Tom Morgan that did that analysis as a separate analysis from this carbon report. So that's something to kind of keep in mind as we go through the results, that this is just looking at the forest ecosystem carbon results, and that the HWP results is then a separate analysis. So forest carbon stocks. So this is kind of a slide to go through how we calculated each of these different pools. Live trees and standing dead trees are based on our biomass equations. Live trees, we added the foliage. For standing dead trees, we also included a reduction for decay. Understory vegetation is basically a modeled estimate. Downwood debris uses the actual measured values that we collected on the FIA plots. One of the things to keep in mind is that we did not include basically piles of downwood, like slash piles. We're including this analysis, and part of that is just because there's still some inconsistency in some of the protocol and how some stuff is being collected. And also trying to estimate density of wood within a pile is just, yeah, practically going out and doing that in the woods still has some, it's a little problematic, and we're getting a lot of variation with those samples. So for this analysis, we didn't include those estimates of carbon in piles. Forest floor, so we went and used the collected measurements, which uses the National Estimation Protocol for forest floors. And then roots on live and standing dead trees, which uses a national FIA protocol, essentially means it's a model value. And then organic soils also is a model value using a model developed by Dr. Grant Domke from 2017. So the first thing I'm going to do is present the results for carbon stocks. And for carbon stocks, what we do is we look at what we call the current status is based on the current 10-year moving average, essentially. So for this report, we're looking at measurements taken from 2007 through 2016. So each of those years represents what we call a panel. So that's a total of 10 panels. And then we take the average of those 10 panels to come up with basically a current estimate. That's what we come up with, a 10-year moving average estimate of the current status. And that's what we're going to present. We're going to be looking at for carbon stocks. So looking at carbon stocks, so for the report, for the Oregon Carbon Report, this is what's included in the report for just kind of a summary of total carbon stocks by the different pools. We have a total of about 3.2 billion metric tons of carbon stocks in the state of Oregon. I just have to move this thing my way. I can't see my notes very well. You can see that about a third of that is in live trees. Another big chunk of it is in the soils, carbon and the organic soil, carbon and soils, sorry. And then you can show how it's kind of divided up into the other different pools. It's pretty interesting, though. It's pretty shocking to see how much carbon is just within the live tree pool and also the organic soil pool. The other column in that is the sampling error with that estimate. So that's something to keep in mind as we go through and start looking at some of the graphics I'm showing, some of the different charts. You'll see that there's error bars each associated with this, each of these estimates. And for the current status estimates, which is that 10-year moving average, the sampling error is pretty good. When we get to flux, it's a little different. But right now, the sampling error for most of these estimates is pretty good. So we feel pretty confident in some of these estimates that we're showing right now. So that's what we're looking at for total carbon in different pools. So if we look at it graphically, by ownership, this is what we have. So if you look at, like, for example, the bar on the right, which is National Forest, so they have about 1.7 billion metric tons of carbon on National Forest right now. And you can see that federal ownerships account for roughly two-thirds of the statewide total carbon, or about 2.1 billion metric tons of carbon are on the public ownerships right now, or federal ownerships, sorry. And then looking at private and tribal ownerships, which includes basically those two columns, sorry, on the left, corporate and non-corporate ownerships, that includes about 980 million metric tons of carbon, which is about a third of the total statewide carbon stock. And then state and local government forests store the remaining carbon, which is about 147 million metric tons. So this is how it's divided up by ownership. In terms of total stocks, you know, this is obviously because a lot of the forest, national forest is a large part of the forest land in Oregon. So obviously they have a large part of the carbon. And the other thing that's kind of interesting though, is just looking at how it's kind of divided up by different pools. And the soils, yeah, there's a lot of carbon in the soils. So looking at the next slide, and this one is looking at it by per acre. So this kind of helps account for, you know, the results of the issue with how much ownership is being included here. So this normalizes it essentially. So you can see that the amount of carbon stored per acre is another way of just looking at forest carbon data. The chart shows the average metric of tons per acre of carbon by ownership. So you can see that the amount of carbon stocks per acre is generally higher for public forests, including state and county managed lands, than on corporate and non-corporate lands. So while roughly they're similar in terms of the largest pool, the forest soils, public forests generally store a little more carbon in live trees per acre. So the results of these reflect a different forest management goals and objectives among the owners. Public lands include significant amount of forest managed and or reserved primarily for late successional and for older forest conditions, as evidenced by this chart. And so that plays out. The other chart I'm going to show next kind of shows how that's distributed by the different ownerships. So we have the green bars are showing the total amount of forest land area by ownership. And then the gray bar is showing the amount of carbon with the percent of carbon within that ownership. So you can see that the Forest Service has approximately 47% of the forest area and currently stores about 52% of the carbon stocks. State and local governments store about 5% of the stocks on 4% of the forests. And the other federal forests with about 13% of the forest land store approximately 13% of the stocks. Non-corporate forests manage about 13% of the forest land area and store about 11% of the stocks. Where a corporate manages about 22% of the forest land area and stores about 19% of the stock. So that's just kind of a quick summary of stocks. There's a lot more detail in the report if you haven't looked at it. But just thought it was kind of interesting to kind of go through and highlight some of those findings in terms of the stocks. So now if we go look at flux. So flux is one that starts to get a little more trickier, but this is one where it's a lot more, for me anyway, it's a lot more interesting because now we're looking at actual change estimates. All right, sorry, I just had to move these bars around. So for flux, so one of the things to keep in mind when we go and look at flux is that for every pool of forest carbon, there's a rate of carbon input and a rate of carbon output. And then basically the flux represents the amount of carbon going into a pool minus the amount of carbon going out of that pool. So flux is reported in units of CO2 equivalents, which is unlike stocks. So if you're reporting just in units of carbon, now we're looking at units of CO2 equivalents. The current estimates of forest carbon flux are based on one repeat measurement on 60% of all the plots in Oregon. And I'll go into a little more detail on that on the next slide. So 100% of all the forest inventory plots will be remeasured by the 2020 field season. Yeah, if COVID hadn't happened, that probably would have been true. We're getting there. I don't know if we'll have 100%, but we'll be close after this field season. They're still out there measuring like crazy. They'll be measuring probably till the end of this month. Depends on the weather, but we'll see. And then the annual forest carbon flux is estimated for actual measurements of growth, removals, and mortalities. That's one of the things really cool about estimates of change is that it's based on actual measurements of change. So going into a little more detail on how we calculate flux. So if you remember, the current status was based on that 10-year moving average. So flux now is looking at, so for example, we have the measurements that were taken initially in 2001, we went back 10 years later in 2011, remeasured those same set of plots. Then we look at the difference between 2011 and 2001. So basically that's 1 year's of change. And then in 2012, we'll look at that difference between 2012 and 2002, 2013 to 2003, et cetera, on through the different panels up to what we have measured up through 2016 for this report. So then what we do is then we take the estimated change then is the average of these differences. So you go through and look at these differences by each panel, those individual years of measurements, and then you take the average of those and that's what we come up with our flux estimates. So we started remeasuring our plots in 2011 and for this report we went through 2016, so basically that represents 60% of the remeasured plots now are included in this report. So summarizing flux for the state of Oregon by the different pools. So now we're looking at 1 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent per year. So this is basically telling us the amount of carbon is being sequestered or not, essentially each year in these different pools. For the total for Oregon, we're at just almost 31 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent per year is being sequestered in Oregon's forests. So we're at 30.91. And you can see by the different pools here that live trees represent a huge proportion of that flux that's happening in the state of Oregon. So one of the things to keep in mind is that the positive flux values represent an increase in that particular pool, where a negative value represents an increase in that pool during that time year, the average of that time year period. So basically there's transfers of carbon happening out of those pools if you see negative values. The majority of annual increases are in the live trees. Okay, so negative flux represents a reduction in CO2 for a particular pool. Yep, okay, so I talked about that. Decrease of 6.8 million metric tons in the down, well, that's an example. So one of the things that's interesting is we're seeing a pretty large decrease in CO2 equivalents from downwood. You can see here it was 6.82, negative 6.82. And we're seeing that fairly consistently across the different states where we're seeing, basically comparing from those first time we went measure and went back and remeasured those plots, that there's now less downwood debris on those plots than there was when we first initially measured those plots. So that's just kind of an overall summary of the flux by the different pools. So now I'll go through and show some of the charts for flux. So looking at the different ecoregions around the state, you can see here that the West Cascades and the Coast Range represent a huge proportion of flux in the forests for Oregon. So let's see. So the output of carbon, Sorry, I'm just looking at my notes real quick. Okay, so over 60% of the total annual sequestration occurred west in the West Cascades, with 36% of the coast ecoregion. Oh, the West Cascades represent 36% of the flux, sorry, and the coast ecoregion represents 28% of the flux. And this is, this is pretty much expected because we know those forests are very productive. And one of the things to keep in mind is that our error bars can be really large for these areas. And this is because there's a larger variation in flux because of the different mixes of ownerships and because these estimates are only based on 60% of remeasured plots. As we get more remeasured plots, we've definitely seen these error bars start to tighten up. That's just something we want to keep in mind for that. So that's what we're looking at for the different ecoregions, the flux in the different ecoregions by the different pools across the state of Oregon. Majority is in West Cascades and the coast, less so in like in the East Oregon, and Blue Mountains is pretty good in the East Cascades. But I'll go through and go through a little more detail on some of these things. So the next slide is looking at flux by ownership. So the bulk of the annual change is in live trees, as shown by the green segments. And the chart is showing that nearly all, about 92% of the net flux is being driven by live tree growth on the federal forest lands, with the remainder on non-corporate forest land. So I said earlier that these results reflect the different mandates, goals, and objectives of public and private lands. Whereas the public lands are managed for a wide array of values, including a significant amount of older forest structure and reserves, corporate lands are mostly managed to yield a sustainable harvest level right at annual growth. This is worth noting that this chart does not depict gross growth. Gross growth accounts for the increase in live tree growth before harvest mortality. And I'll get into that detail in the next chart. Large proportion of growth from the corporate ownerships is then transferred into the harvest wood products. So that's one of the things that's really cool is that we have that additional analysis that we could then look and show where this carbon went. So error bars on this represents a 95% confidence interval. Net flux for each ownership. Uncertainty is very large for corporate and state and local forests, as you'll see here. So basically the error bars that include zero show the annual flux for these ownerships are not statistically different from zero. And that basically the other federally owned forests appear to be net sinks of carbon. So now looking at some of the different components of what goes into that net flux on live trees. Basically it's gross growth, harvest mortality. And here, green represents the gross growth. This kind of dark red represents harvest, and the other shades represent different kinds of mortality. Once again, you'll see pretty wide error bars on some of these things here. So gross growth per acre, and this is gross growth per acre per year, has been highest on forests managed by corporate and the state and local government groups. Based on the state's annual timber harvest, we expect to see these ownerships contribute more to the harvest wood products pool than the forests managed by non-corporate groups and the Forest Service. Proportion of the graph bars below the horizontal line represent negative flux from harvest mortality or decreases in sequestered carbon. Annual flux associated with mortality from natural and other causes, the yellow blocks, was consistently larger for mortality from fire, insects, and disease. On federal forest land, total mortality was higher than harvest, which is kind of interesting. Timber harvest here shows a decrease in the forest carbon, but much of this carbon then gets transferred into the harvest wood products pools, as I had mentioned. And then the black dot in the middle represents the net flux. So that was kind of a cool thing looking overall at for live trees for the different ownerships in the state. So for this presentation, one of the things I want to do was then look at, and this is not included in the report, but what if we broke this up into different county groups? What if we broke it up into west side and east side groups? So by doing that, then we see that 75% of the live tree stocks are in the west side counties. And one of the things I want to note in this is that for FIA, Hood River County is included as a west side county for this analysis. So basically, so on the west side, live trees stocks, so 73% are in public ownerships and 27% in private ownerships of the stocks. And then east side counties represent 25% of the live tree stocks. And the east side counties, it's 82% public and 18% private. And you can see the net flux there for the different different county groups. So I'll go through and provide a little more detail then by these groupings. So looking at the different pools by county groups, you can see how it breaks out. Where you can see on the west side, once again, as our other charts have shown, that live trees on the west side account for a large part of the flux in the state. And you can see then how it compares to the east side counties, which I thought was really kind of cool to see how that breaks out. There isn't anything too dramatic here. I just thought it'd be kind of neat to kind of break it up and see. And I can make these tables available for anyone that wants these later too. The other thing I want to do then was look at ownership. What if we looked at the county groupings, but then look at the ownerships? How does that kind of play out? And this is what we see. So basically on the west side counties, most of the flux is in the Forest Service lands, as on the east side counties. You can see the corporate ownerships appear to be negative, but also notice that there's pretty large sampling error around that estimate. So it's probably not statistically valid, or not valid, but I mean, statistically different from zero. And you can see non-corporate lands are still, sequestering quite a bit on the west side county. So that was really kind of neat to look at by ownerships, just kind of see how the different pools kind of play out by different ownerships, by the different county groupings. And that's something we can do with these different analyses, is we can provide kind of custom tabling different options the way you want to look at this stuff. So that's a real quick summary for Oregon. And just want to keep in mind that there's 3.2 billion metric tons of carbon in Oregon's forests. And we're right now estimating that the state is sequestering about 30.9 million metric tons of CO2 equivalents per year. And one of the things I didn't show in the summary here was that net emissions from wildfire up to 2016 anyway, were estimated about 3.6 million metric tons of CO2 a year. And that was pretty much my quick summary of the Oregon Carbon Report. But the next thing I want to do is talk a little bit more about some of these other carbon efforts we have going on, basically what we've done from this and moving forward. So the next thing I want to talk about real quick is what we call the Pacific Temperate Forest Carbon Stocks and Flux Report. So what we did is we realized that after doing these different reports, now we can really look at the entire West Coast, essentially. What happens if we put all these different reports together into one regional analysis? So now we're coordinating with Oregon, California, Washington, and British Columbia. And in British Columbia, we're working with Thomas White, who's the provincial government of British Columbia, and also Werner Kurtz with the Canadian Forest Service. working on this regional report. So we're going to use the FIA and British Columbia Forest Inventory to compile this regional report. For FIA, it's going to be including the complete remeasurement from the first 10-year cycles. So the Oregon report is looking at 60% of remeasured plots. For this one, we're going to be using 100% of the remeasured plots to help tighten those error bars. And right now, phase one was initiated this year, and shockingly, Cal Fire picked up the bill for that whole thing. So phase one includes basically the ecosystem forest carbon report for the whole region. Cal Fire picked up the funding for that. And right now, well, I'll get into that for the next slide, but yeah, that's really cool that they were willing to do that. Because one of the things they want to do then is see how is this information then going to help them, you know, how does that kind of play into their state carbon report in terms of context and all that kind of stuff. And then phase two is going to be looking at the harvested wood products, and that one, that phase is not yet funded, but that's what we're going to do, is we're going to do first the forest ecosystem report and then the harvested wood products report. For content of the report, so we're going to go and do carbon stux and flux by ownership, ecological region. We want to do some analysis by moisture regime, forest productivity. We want to understand disturbance impacts. And we also want to look at forest land conversion within the region. So the whole thing of this is we want to do is we want to help understand what is the ecological capacity of this region, the Pacific temperate forest region, to store and sequester carbon. And the idea with that, we want to set up a set of basically ecological metrics that can be used to help monitor these different forest carbon pools, so we can then start using this to track some of the state and then regional goals. So we'll be able to have kind of the state level, but also a regional level look at forest carbon. And for the forest carbon report that was funded by Cal Fire, we have delivery date of the end of June 2022. So yeah, pressure's on to deliver on that. But we have a lot of data, so I think it's gonna be great. I'm pretty excited about it. The other thing I want to talk about real quick is the PNW Carbon Initiative. So this initiated with the September workshop, September 2019 workshop that we did in Portland, and Andrew attended that. And from that workshop, which was stakeholder driven or in a kind of a co-production framework, we've identified three different research objectives from that workshop that we're pursuing at PNW. One is carbon science synthesis, synthesizing all the different, what we know about the state of the knowledge of carbon right now. Andy Gray is leading the carbon model assessment group, looking at different current carbon models, you know, strengths and weaknesses and the inputs for those models. And then the group I'm leading is the carbon fluxes and implications of management strategies group. And that one is where we're looking at different scenarios. If we want to start modeling and doing some projections, what are the different scenarios we want to look at for doing those different projections? And that'd be using some of these models from Andy's group. And just go in a little more detail on the flux group. So we're using the regional report as our modeling baseline. We've also started an analysis of timber flow and wood product flow within the region analysis. Todd might talk a little bit about some of that stuff. And then the scenario development is really, we want to have it kind of a science-based towards climate mitigation targets. We want to understand the carbon impacts from forest management. And then we also want to understand how changes to forest management and utilization in one area may affect the entire region. So that's, pretty excited about that. It's kind of taking our carbon reporting to the next step. So next year, we're going to start the initial modeling runs, and we'll be doing some modeling calibration. And one of the things, first scenario we're going to look at is kind of the business as usual modeling scenario. And that's really quick on the PNW Carbon Initiative. I just have three more slides. I know I'm getting just about out of time. But Dr. Jeremy Fried is proposing a study. And he's done some fire effects modeling, or some looking at using the FIA data to understand the fire effects on the plots. So he went in and looked at, from the Labor Day fires, he went in and did an analysis to look at how many FIA plots are impacted by these different fires. And he came up with a total of 273 plots. And one of the things, when I talked to him about this, that he wanted to stress is that really, you know, no ownership is really excluded from this. That it's really impacting all ownerships across the state. So it's a real rare opportunity to go in and look at the effects of these fires on different ownerships across the state, on the west side forests. And he also showed, you know, that this covers a wide range of different age classes, and then also different forest types. And yeah, obviously no dry forest types. So a lot of the previous studies have been done on the, you know, more drier forest type, more fire prone forest, but this is a really cool opportunity to go and look at some of the west side forest types to do some of these analyses. And here's just a quick map he put together with some remote sense imagery, but also using this predicted basal area mortality analysis, where the red plots predict pretty high basal area mortality, and the green dots essentially detect zero. And one of the things that's interesting is that it seems like in the west side forests anyway, within the burn areas, it's pretty much total devastation or not so much. So, which is really different from some of the east side forest types. So it's pretty, and this is all based on this modeling stuff too. So we don't really have the data yet to really know, but this is a really cool opportunity to go in and look at that. So that's what he's proposing, to go in and look at these burned over areas. And what he wants to do then is help understand how the pre-fire stand structures, managed or not, have driven the fire effects on tree mortality, canopy, and forest floor. What are short and long-term carbon dynamics on these burned west side forests? What's the midterm responses and the recovery and the regeneration from these different forest types? And what are the post-fire trajectories within these forest types? And then evaluating the accuracy of the remote sensing models, and then does the stand structure and management history matter under these kinds of extreme weather events? So this isn't fully funded yet. He's talking, I know he's been talking to Andrew Yostall and some other folks at ODF about helping get some of the funding together to put this in, because I think one of the things that he wants to do is get it started in 2021 while we can still get in. We have a lot of measured data from the forest inventory plots, but now the trick is to get in and get back on these burned over plots and collect the data while we still can. And with that, I'm done. Thank you very much. And I think I have 3 minutes for a question, but yep.
Cindy Deacon Williams has a question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Glenn, looks like some really neat stuff, and I'm particularly delighted to see the post-fire stuff that you're proposing. I'm wondering if you're going to have any greater level of detail on the managed or not, or is it just a yes, it was managed, or no, it was not unmanaged. Are you going to be able to get into looking at what kind of specific management occurred prior to the fires?
I assume we have pretty good information from the FIA plots on the kind of management in terms of the intensity of the management. And we've also have some different attributes we measured, like was it clear cut or heavy thinning and that kind of stuff. So
awesome.
I think we'll be able to have pretty good information on the kind of management that happened on those plots prior to the fires. So we should be
able to,
we should be able to do that.
Yeah, that sounds, it feeds directly into conversation we had earlier in the day in terms of whether or not we're going to be able to tease out from a forest management policy perspective what sort of management actions that we have taken are more likely to be successful in showing resilience to climate change and future fire. So that sounds really good. Glad. I hope you're able to secure the funding.
Yep.
necessary to do it.
No, I've been reading the same articles in Oregonian, and yeah, I know there's some controversy around that. And I'm hoping that the FIA data can help. Idea is to have some science-based, you know, understanding about the impacts of these things for moving forward. So I think we have an opportunity to do that. Yep.